actually went to EuroPro Tour qualifying school, got through first stage, actually beat a guy in the playoff now, which is kind of funny to look back on. I beat him in a playoff in the first stage to get through to final stage, and he is now a two-time winner on tour, Todd Clements. You learn a lot about a golfer in the first 5 to 10 minutes of watching them hit a golf ball.
Sure.
Yeah, you're going to see, you're going to put something in their hands, and you can see on their face straight away. The more we swing across the golf ball, that is going to determine a lot of, going to bring a lot of cut spin. The more we cut the golf ball, the more spin we're going to have.
Yeah. So,
there is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
This is month 3 of the official sponsorship of Member Guest and Second Swing. So it's a big deal that you're here.
Yeah.
And you used to play at the U of M, but you, and obviously people will hear the accent a little bit. You're from England, is that correct?
Yep.
All right, so I always make sure I do my research, but tell us a little bit about the background, because I also saw a fun stat. Because I know you won't say this, but you won, what is this, the Peter McAvoy Trophy? So it's you, Lee Westwood, and Justin Rose, right? Those three guys?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's pretty sick.
In that order, too.
Yeah, in that order. Yeah, so tell us about a little bit about your background, and we'll talk about everything else.
Yeah, so I grew up in England, played loads of golf growing up. Actually, was never planning on playing college golf at all. It was always kind of in the back of my mind, and then I kind of got to I was like 17, I was like, you know what? I didn't really like change or anything. So I was like, I'm probably going to stay home and I'll just turn, as soon as I'm done with school, I'll turn pro. Well, let's go. Actually, then the next year, so I've turned up from when I'm my last year of junior golf. So when I was, would have been just before I turned 18, start playing some junior tournaments. There's a really good junior amateur circuit and men's amateur circuit around the UK and Europe. Played the first event at Scottish Boys at Montrose Links, which is, I think it's the third oldest golf course in the world, I want to say.
Jeez.
Maybe fifth.
Wow.
Something on those lines.
That's sick.
So played there and it was unbelievably cold. And that's me living here for 6 years. That is some of the coldest weather I've ever been in my life.
Really?
Played that. I think I came like seventh or something that week. I was playing really good until I doubled one of the last few holes coming in. Otherwise, I was right up in it. And then the next week later was the Peter McAvoy Trophy, which is always that kind of flagship event to start the year. We actually end up getting called back from 72 holes to 36 holes because of how much rain we had during that time, which was, if anyone was there during that time, we didn't even get a practice round in. It rained that much.
Wow.
So it was miserable. But yeah, I ended up winning that event, and then that leaped me into the England squad for the rest of the year and played for England for the whole year. And it was a really fun year playing some cool golf.
So then how do you, I feel like I've asked this question to a few people now that have like played at Minnesota from overseas, Angus Flanagan being one of them. Like how do you end up here? How do you end up in Minnesota? Right? Like that's,
mine was a really weird one. I think you've completed the trifecta now. I think you've had Angus, Harry, and me. We're all on the team together. So
yeah.
Well, congrats.
Yeah. I got the trifecta.
Yeah. So I think I went to the German boys and girls amateur championship. I think it was like a month after that whole stuff happened. I was out there with the England squad as well. And I'm playing with this one other English guy and another guy. And Justin Smith, still the coach of the U now. He was assistant at the time. And
I've also had Justin on too. So I guess I basically got all four of you guys.
you've completed it.
Yeah.
So he's like walking around watching the guy I'm playing with. And to be honest, he just had a bit of a tantrum that day. So me and Justin just ended up chatting just because, he was there. Why not have a chat? Got on great. I played remember playing some okay golf, nothing special. And then about, I think it was like a month and a half later, I'm at the Irish boys with the England squad. We're out there. And I get this random, I'm getting this random phone call from like a 612 number. I'm like, I've never even seen that before. Yeah. I'm like, what is this? I answer the phone, it's Justin. He's like, this was the first day I could reach out to you. Like, would love to talk to you about coming to the U. And I was like, I had no idea there was even rules about when you couldn't or can speak to me, all these kind of other things. So anyway, it was so basically I met Justin in Frankfurt, Germany, and ended up in Minnesota.
Wow.
Is a short story to that.
And I'm going to ask a really dumb question just because I don't know how golf works overseas. Like, do the universities have college golf like they do here? How does it work when you're done playing, you know, after the age of 17, 18? What's the typical trajectory over there compared to here where it's very, you know, go to college, play, you're doing, you know, the big amateur events, and then you try and get your pro card. What's it like over there compared to here?
So it's very similar. So, well, actually, it's not very similar. There is university golf, but it's not very big.
Not like it is here,
no,
right?
Definitely not. There's maybe 10 universities in the whole country that have something.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Some sort of program, I'd say.
Yeah.
And that program really isn't that big. You know, University of Stirling in Scotland, University of St. Andrews too, probably the two biggest ones. And then probably in England, Loughborough and maybe Exeter, I want to say, top of my head. But yeah, it's not very big at all. So the options are you don't turn pro, you work and you play the full amateur, the men's amateur schedule. There's plenty of things to go play. There's probably 10, 15 events in the summer times, I would say,
big.
At the very least. And people just do that for two or three years and then they go, you know what, I'm ready to turn pro. You try and get yourself into the England squads. If you don't, most of the time you just kind of jump into turn pro. Like, funny enough, I actually did the Euro Pro Tour qualifying in that period of time where I've committed to the U. I was still coming, but still, to be honest, I wasn't really 100% sure.
Mm-hmm.
Actually went to Euro Pro Tour qualifying school, got through first stage, actually beat a guy in the playoff now, which is kind of funny to look back on. I beat him in a playoff in the first stage to get through to final stage, and he is now a two-time winner on tour, Todd Clements.
Oh, no way.
Which is kind of funny now. Now I look back and I go, oh, actually, maybe I did have some games.
Maybe I was onto something.
Yeah, but then so I ended up going to final qualifying. I think I missed the full card by about a shot. So I had a decent card for the whole year, and then basically my parents shut me down and went, you're going to college. And I was like, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, well, hey, it's not a bad deal to go to college and be able to play golf. And so did you play – how old are you? I don't even know how old you are.
I'm 25 now.
Oh, you're 25, yeah. So you're still super young. So you've been out of college for what, just a few years now?
Graduated from the U, 23, and then I went down to the University of Central Arkansas for my fifth year.
So I was born in Arkansas.
You were? Whereabouts?
Yeah, I was actually born in Cabot, and then we lived in Little Rock. Yeah. My mom went to University of Arkansas.
Nice.
Woo-pig, I'm rooting for them in March Madness this month. They got a good squad, actually.
Yeah, we actually had it. So Harry came down there with me, too, to play at the University of Central Arkansas. He was there for about 6 months. And I was there for the full year. Me and Harry actually both went down there together to play.
Really?
Yeah.
Arkansas boys.
Yeah.
Didn't even remember that.
Very weird. But yeah, we had a teammate who was from Cabot and stuff too.
Interesting area, right? Like,
very odd.
Not a ton to do. It's like, I feel like when you go to Arkansas, you're not really getting like what the States is like at all. Like, it's definitely a different way of living. That's where my sister ended up going to college there. I toured there. I just wanted to be closer to home, for me. But it's always fun. We go down there and been to a couple of football games and stuff. Yeah, so
Fayetteville's cool. When you go south of Fayetteville, it gets a little bit wishy-washy. I think I always say when I came to college, I was like, well, I'm going to give it a go for the first semester. Most likely, I'll probably come home afterwards. That's just me being young and just still not wanting to do any change, all these kind of things. And then I obviously loved it. I still joke my parents now. They forced me to come. And now they can't make me come home. But I think if I would have started it down in Arkansas, I think I would have had a way different experience than I did when I came here.
1,000%.
Completely different.
Yeah. Well, and like Minnesota's underrated too, in my opinion. I feel like a lot of people that end up coming here, like it's a flyover state or whatever, and a lot of people that come here, whether it's for sports or whatever, end up staying here because they love it. And it's just it's a great place to be. And obviously you stayed too, and we're happy for that. So then you transition. When did you start at Second Swing?
I started Second Swing last February time, March time.
Okay. So it's been a little over a year.
Yeah, a little
Congratulations over a year. On 1 year. You probably feel like a new guy there. I feel like everyone I talk to at Second Swing has been there for, you got people that been there for 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah, people, I always talk to people and they're like, yeah, I've been here, it's my 15th year. I'm like, I feel like I've been there 15 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still very new.
And you're part of I think I first saw you, so you joined the social media team. Obviously, you're a fitter as well, now at the Minnetonka location where I primarily go. Before that, were you at Minneapolis?
Yeah, I was in Minneapolis until about October, September, October time, joined the social media and marketing team. primarily for the whole winter time. And then February, March time, I came transitioned back into some fitting. Still do some marketing stuff on the side.
Yeah, honestly, the marketing stuff has been great. And I've said it once, I say it a million times, like to get perspectives on like all the different equipment, I think is just awesome. Cause you know, you follow the major manufacturers and you kind of like get this maybe unconscious bias as to like what's really good or what, and like to see you guys put stuff out there and it's all over the board. Like that's the things that golf junkies kind of geek out about.
Yeah, and there's so much we can really do we're not tied to one brand. You know, people are always going to say we had our favorites, but they usually our favorites because it's the fitters' favorites.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we know that these things are always going to perform. Like we're going through our fitters' choice stuff that's being posted at the moment, and you know, there's a lot of similar brands that keep popping up, and a lot of stuff is actually in your golf bag.
Yeah.
Because it is that good.
Yeah, it is good. Yeah. So for you specifically, how did you decide like fitting was the path? Like it's always interesting. I've, you know, had a bunch of second swing guys on and these are always great conversations. And I always like to hear how, you know, one goes from, you know, playing at a high level and then decides like, yeah, I really like the fitting aspect or like working in golf. Like how did you decide to take that path or what was it?
Yeah, I think, never going to give up playing competitive golf. I still played a lot of competitive golf last year. We'll keep doing that. But I think the biggest thing for me was I've done coaching in the past. Wasn't the biggest fan of some of those things. And I know going through the motions of getting your PGA qualification, right, is you got to do a lot of junior coaching. You got to do a lot of this stuff and a lot of that stuff. And the hours it put into me didn't really make much sense for stuff that I could kind of get straight into, right?
Sure.
So I think fitting is always something that was probably the only, I would say it's probably the only piece of the puzzle that I didn't really have in my plethora of knowledge of golf. I knew equipment to a certain extent, but now I really know equipment. I really know how everything works and know what's going on. So it at least gives me this background now that I kind of had I had a hole in my knowledge, and this is kind of helping me to kind of really get a real broad sense of everything.
Yeah, well, I've probably waited way too long to introduce kind of like the topic where we wanted to deep dive on today, because I've had Mark Olson came on. We were talking early in the season about drivers. I talked with Cam a lot about kind of like irons last week, and I've seen a couple, whether it's like clips or YouTube videos of you specifically talking about like club path and face and the relation to the golf swing. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that because for me specifically, this whole off season has been about changing my path. So for context, I'd say 3-4 years ago when I really started taking golf seriously, like trying to get down to a scratch, I bet my path was, this is no exaggeration, I had a -6 path with like a super closed face. Would that be right?
Yeah.
-6 path with a super closed face, and that's how I made it work. Like it just came down here and I closed the face to hit like pull cuts. And over the last 3 years, I've really worked. I've probably gotten it too far back to now where my path is, I'd say on average between into out -2 to -3. And like, I still have that closed face. So now I just like, it starts left and kind of goes left. And I'm really trying to neutral out like the path and face, and it's getting there. And where this is going, it's like, I want to talk about for you and fittings, like when you're trying to match up path and face, what are the equipment drivers that help with that? Like, so for us, we talked a little bit about like shaft weight, right? Like I think I was playing 105 X's for a season. And it's like, well, if we, you know, put a 130 in your hand, like it's going to slow down your swing, right? And like, it'll actually maybe neutral out the path a little bit and help you with face. Like, talk to me a little bit about maybe some of those aspects, especially as somebody that's played at a high level, what you've learned, and when people come into your bay, like how you maybe help fix those things for maybe better players. There's obviously the 20 handicaps that like we're trying to, you know, figure out launch and spin and numbers, but then the better players that you get, it's probably more of those types of conversations.
Yeah, for sure. And I think your example was great because yeah, you have a very fast transition. The what lighter that shaft is, we're not gonna be able to feel what that head is. You know, we straight away when we put something heavier in your hands, well, yeah, you started to feel where that head was. That face wasn't turning over anyone near as much. So there's a few things like that. But I think club path is huge. When we're looking at someone trying to fit someone for a golf club, well, club putt is going to really determine how much we can really do. If I have someone coming in with a 10 across path, that's always going to be spinny, because the more we swing across the golf ball, that is going to determine a lot of, can bring a lot of cut spin. The more we cut the golf ball, more spin we're going to have.
Yeah.
So when we're looking, especially in a driver fitting, that's a great example there where we hit a driver that swings 8 across. Well, when we swing across, most likely we're going to be hitting a little bit down on the ball too. So you've really got two things there that are just spin monsters. You know.
Yeah.
And we got to try and tame that.
I do. I hit it high and spinny. I always have. It's been like, especially for where I play out at Windsong, like there are certain days that when you're hitting it high and spinny, you got no chance to hold greens, hit your numbers. Like you got to learn how to like flight it, hit it down, take spin off. And that's been my struggle. And like trying to figure out how to do that's where I'm trying to go.
Yeah. And I think, and then we start looking at, okay, well, what drivers can get us into the right launch and spin windows? Launch is typically pretty easy, but spin gets really tough. You know, you can be pretty lazy here and put a GT4 in someone's hand and say, good luck. Here you go. Spin's in a good window. Good luck. I mean, I would say I'm always empathetic to performance. I think the more we look at this, we're going to try and find you the best we can. Sometimes the best, optimal might be 2,500, but best case scenario might be about 3,000 to 3,500 for you, especially if we're starting at about 4,500 spin.
Yeah.
That 1,000 is a way bigger deal than you can probably think at the time, but that's going to make a big difference. That could be 15, 20 yards out on the golf course. So, yeah, really, club path is going to determine a lot of things. And we look in the vice versa about a in-to-out path. Well, that's going to be taking away a lot of spin. So all that really means is someone's gets stuck inside and they're now going to have to rely on their timing because the club is stuck right here now. Unless you're moving your body very well, like a Morikawa or someone like that who's really kind of moving his body well, you're relying on timing, on how much your wrists are moving. So
sure.
Then we start getting those troublesome spots where, well, now the face is closed with an in-to-out path. Okay, we're going to start seeing those quack hoods. We'll call them some mallards, right? They're going to just be flying out of the sky. And why they fly out of the sky so quickly is because there's no spin on the golf ball. So then it's a completely different conversation where it's, okay, well, we need to add some spin to you. Spin is always going to be your friend if you're a heavy in-to-out swinger because, well, you're going to be struggling to keep spin on that golf ball. And now we need to find you a driver that keeps spin on the golf ball as much as possible. So it's very interesting. You have like, if you can have back-to-back fittings where you've got someone is out to win, then it's in-to-out, well, that's completely, they're two completely different things. And we have this conversation a lot where you fit someone for a driver who has a heavy out-to-in path. We'll look at the Ping G440 SFT as a great example. A lot of heel weighting, basically it's an anti-slice driver. Well, I've had the conversation a few times where someone said, well, if I change my swing, will this driver not work for me? I'm like, yes, you're right to a certain extent, but you're going to have to make, I mean, how long is it taking you to move from 6 across to 4 inside and you work your game?
Three, four years and I hit balls close to every day.
Yeah, and you're working with a good coach too. So
yeah, shout out Will.
Will. So there's a few things that like that. That's where it gets really tricky, where you're trying to put a bit of confidence into what you're playing. You know, I think I saw a great video of Tommy Fleetwood, I think it was this morning actually, from TaylorMade, and he said something about how playing his driver a little bit higher in spin because the tee shot really sets the precedent for the rest of the hole.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're not putting a good tee shot out there, well, then we're going to really struggle. So.
Yeah, when you do full bag fittings, do you always start with the driver? Like, is the driver's swing, generally speaking, going to be consistent with what you see all the way down?
Yes and no. I think I like to let the off to player's choice. I think driver does take the most out of you, so sometimes it does make the most sense to do that. But if someone's priority is to get a new set of irons and a hybrid or a fairwood, we'll probably start there. I want to make sure we get the priority one taken care of. If we can't get through the whole bag for you, then I'd rather us do two sessions in one and just cram everything in and not really do my due diligence, right?
Yeah, so. No, that makes sense. It is kind of curious to me because obviously, you know, one swing is off a tee and then another one, like you're interacting with the ground. And a lot of people would tell you, like, you know, golf in its, I don't want to say simplest form, but you really do have like three or four different swings, or things that you need to do. Like your driver swing is not the same as your chipping motion, right? And your iron swing is going to be a lot different than even maybe like a wedge swing. And then like, we got to throw the putter in there too. So it's just, it just is kind of interesting to talk through those types of things within a, a fitting with someone like
and
you.
I think my my old coach, he's the head England coach, Rob Watts, he gave me a great analogy to me once. We were talking about, I was like, you know, my driver swing looks so different when I'm hitting my irons. Like, is that a real issue? And he was like, no, it's two completely different things. One, you're trying to hit up on one thing, and he's trying to hit down on the other thing. So it doesn't matter if they look completely different, as long as they're efficient and they're working the right ways. And I'm like, and he said, think of it this way. It's like any sort of wood or any sort of irons or wedges, it's like doing a high jump. I mean, you're trying to get it really high and come down really soft, right? And then the long game, any of your woods, your drivers, it's like doing a long jump. So basically, you've got two jumps, but two completely different techniques.
And yeah.
I was like, oh, it's a long way around, but yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. So when you're, like if I bring this back to talking drivers, irons, with the, I'm working this out in my head, club path, face, I would consider the third thing like angle of attack, which I think is directly correlated to, you know, stopping power, right? Or like being able to, like you just said, hit down on the ball. Are there different matchups with different types of heads and shafts that you see for people's swings? And ultimately where I'm trying to get to with this, Harrison, is like for the people listening, you know, probably put themselves into a couple different types of buckets. You have the, you know, the big slicers, like you talked about, right? The people that I used to be like very out to in, close face, like spinny, going off to the right. You got the people that are hitting those like double cross, you know, left, start left, and then it goes left with no spin. And then obviously people are trying to like come back to the middle, and the third part of that equation is angle of attack. And so for the people listening, you know, hopefully the value that they're getting out of this is hearing like, oh, okay, that makes sense. When I go into a fitting, or maybe if I'm just trying to like swing in my bay, here's maybe the things I should, you know, mess around with. The third part of this equation is the angle of attack. And I would, like, sometimes I look down at different irons and manufacturers, and some look like really open face to me, and then some kind of look like hooded and shut, and they almost like make you want to hit down on it more. Talk to me about like that. Are there certain things that you put in people's hands and all of a sudden you just, voila, it gets fixed?
Oh, all the time. That is one of those biggest things where, you know, you learn a lot about a golfer in the first 5 to 10 minutes of watching them hit a golf ball.
Sure.
Yeah, you're going to put something in their hands and you can see on their face straight away. I like to look at people's facial expressions when I put stuff in their hands because...
Are they smiling or are they frowning?
Yeah, if I think someone... It's my opinion, but I think if someone needs something that's more game improvement style, but they've come from like a really old set of blades that they had no business hitting, and I put a G440 in their hands, which has a pretty thick top line, and I give it to them and their face goes... I'm going to learn a lot about that. I'm going to go try and find a different brand that has a thinner top line, a better looking game improvement. I like a Mizuno 245. Great option. Looks like a blade. Feels like a game improvement iron.
Yeah.
So you can learn a lot from that. I think there's a lot of situations where you can put yourself in a bucket where it's, like you said, it's I'm a slicer, I'm a hooker of the golf ball. I always say the hookers of the golf ball always end up in a really good spot because they're going to look for the most spinny driver.
Yeah.
Spin's going to be their friend. So
you can always open it up and add more spin, right? Like, absolutely. Probably it's way easier to get someone who hits it left to now hit it right than someone who hits it right to come left.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always say, I had a guy last night when I was talking about, and he was a ex-teaching professional, very good golfer. And he was, and we ended up getting into a GT1. She just showed no loft. And he's always said, I can't get spin on the golf ball. And we started at GT2, still spin was low. I was like, well, let's put the GT1 in your hand.
People played the GT1. I like never see it.
Well, it's not meant for the golfers like that. It's meant for moderate to slow swing speeds because it has so much weight in the back. It's very high launching, high spinning driver in relation to the other drivers in the model. But he was getting a 1.51 smash all day long of it, and spin was launch was in a perfect window. We had the two, launch was good, spin was touch low. I was like, well, can't hurt. Let's put it in. It was absolutely perfect, and he was in love with it in 2 seconds.
Huh?
Yeah.
What kind of player was he?
It was like a 3 or 4 handicap.
Oh yeah, so good, really good player. Yeah,
3 or 4 handicap, ex-teaching professional, and he had some really fun stories. He had some good Ricky Fowler stories and stuff, which was cool. But he was a really good golfer, and he just says to me, "I just can't get spin on my golf ball, no matter what." So we just tried some higher spinning, so some mid spinning, mid launching shafts to start, and then we just found the right head for him. I always said to him, it's like, you're in the best scenario you can possibly be in. We're going to put you in the most forgiving head possible, and you're going to love it.
Yeah, you're going to hit a lot of fairways. So the reason I ask is because I think it is one of the coolest things about golf is that amateurs or really anybody can go play similar stuff to what the tour guys play. Like, of course, they get treated differently, and there are the little things that, like, I think I've said this before, but, you know, when Rory's like, yeah, you can go get the exact same driver I have, I'm like, okay, well, I can't get the exact same driver you have, but you can get pretty close. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to find where that kind of overlap is between, you know, there's the tour players, the elite amateurs, the scratch golfers, you know, the 10 handicaps, but there is somewhere that this, like, overlaps. Like, there's obviously a big gap between a 15 handicap and a tour level professional, but there are overlaps in the way that people, like, get fit and the outcomes that can ultimately help us swing, right? Absolutely. Where are some of those overlaps between those two types of players?
Yeah, I think the biggest overlap, and I think it's the one thing that I need more golfers to really understand, is probably is the combo sets. You know, combo sets in themselves are fantastic. You see it every week on tour. You're going to have a ZXI 5 4 iron. You're going to have a ZXI 4 7 from 5 iron down. You know, we see this every single week. I can't remember who won last week, but he had a...
Well, I think Morikawa has, like, a crazy bag. Yeah, I think he has, like, 4-5, and then he's got 6 through maybe 8 or 9, and then he's got different stuff in pitching wedge.
Yeah, or even Cam Young at the weekend. T200 4-iron, T150.
He plays a T200 4-iron?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
We've seen that a lot this year in bags that we've been looking at during our... We do a little rundown on the Second Swing podcast, and we see a lot of weird stuff around people's bag. Well, weird stuff... in parentheses,
because
it's just stuff you wouldn't expect to see in a tour player's bag, but everyone is moving to a game improvement style at the top of the end of the bag. Scottie Scheffler uses a driving iron as his 4-iron.
Yeah.
That's the big, and I think that's where the 15 handicaps of the world versus the elite amateurs and pros are very different. The 15 handicap, 10 handicaps of the world think, well, good ball strikers can be 10 handicap and be a pretty good ball striker and might want to order the ZXI 7s the whole way throughout the bag, as a good example. Well, if we study every single player's bag on tour right now, who's playing a Strixon lineup, I bet you 70% of them have a different 4 and different 5 iron in their golf bag.
Yeah, I've got the 4 iron.
Yeah.
I don't have the 5. Maybe I need it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've got the 4 iron.
Yeah. And they're all doing it. And like Cam Young, one of the best ball strikers in the world at the moment, I would say.
Yeah.
He's using T200 4 iron. Yeah, they may be taking away some loft, but I see this a lot. I have this conversation when we fitting sets of irons and we say, I'm saying, all right, well, I probably would say let's put like something a little bit bigger at the top of the end of the bag. And there's a lot of reluctancies there from probably the 5 to 15 handicaps. The good golfer understands and values the appreciation of forgiveness at the top end of the bag. And you just got to put ego to the side a little bit and just go, I'll take the forgiveness all day long. I mean, it's the 7-wood conversation, it's the 9-wood conversation, it's all the same stuff. You know, if Tommy Fleetwood is not even using a 4-iron, he's using a 9-wood some weeks. You know, time and a place for stuff. But
yeah, of course.
If the best players in the world are doing it, then you shouldn't be ashamed to go do it yourself.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that too, because like I'm moving into a world where I'm actually toying with having kind of two tops of the bags. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going back to see Larry today to get his take on mini drivers, because he thinks I need to play mini driver again. And you know, having like a top of the bag where it's driver, mini driver, and then maybe that's like a 5-wood or 6-wood, like something around there. And then also having a driver, 3-wood, you know, utility wood or hybrid. And for me, like I look at those and I go, you know, one of them is it like where I play at Windsong. I mean, I hit mini driver a lot, and on the par fives, I'm not hitting 3-wood into those par fives. And even if I was, it's honestly probably not the right decision. Like, have you played out at Windsong?
Yeah,
you in the gopher and stuff? Yeah, so like
loads of times out there.
Like hole 9 from the backs.
Oh, you're never reaching it.
You're never reaching it, and then like if you are laying up to that left side, you're probably not like banging 3-wood up there because you could go long or into those bunkers. And if you play it from the ups, like even if you can reach it, good luck like holding a 3-wood on.
Good luck holding that green.
Onto that green. Yeah. And if you're playing, you know, from maybe called the everyday tees that we play from the blues, you know, you're getting like 230 in there. It's like 260 does nothing for you.
Yeah.
And then same with like on hole 12, like you rarely, I mean, I don't see anybody hit three woods into that green.
Yeah, I've only ever seen one person get to that green and two, like, comfortably. He also hold it too, which is a different story. But
wait, hold on 12?
Oh yeah, Albatross on hole 12.
I think. What do you hit? What do you have? Hold on. this is sick.
What is it? He went.
Was this at the Gopher?
Yeah, Gopher junior year. So he went birdied. Oh, he might be able to fact check me on this, but I'm pretty sure he birdied 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, Albatross 12.
No way.
Guy from
sick.
Kent State. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was from Kent State. And I watched it happen. I was like, oh my God. But I think he hit like a 2-iron into there.
Wow.
Yeah, he pounded it.
Was it like a back left pin and it like rolled up the green?
Left.
He holed to the front left pin? That's crazy.
Whacked it outright, hit the hill, came back down, and it went in. And I was watching. I was like 100 yards up watching. I was like, oh my God. And it went in. I was like, oh, that's
wild.
That's crazy.
If anybody that's played at Winsong knows the front left pin location on 12, to hole anything to it obviously is difficult, but to hole a 2-iron from what he's probably 270 or.
Yeah, I think he was. I mean, he hit it far down there, but it was probably at least 260 if I'm top of my head.
Yeah, 260. Yeah, because you guys play from all the way in that back. Yeah. Left tee box. They're reviving that tee box back there, by the way. I know the all the way back has always been there, but you know how there's one up from that just got destroyed? They revived it.
Nice. That's a good tee box.
It is a good tee box. I think I would rather play from there more times than the up one,
risk reward. You can actually like have a chance of getting there and it's better.
Yeah. I think the tee shot's better too.
But like going back to your point though, I think having two different sets at the top of the bag is a great idea. And it's actually something that I'm doing myself as well. I've got a 3-iron, I've got 3-iron, 4-iron, 5-iron sort of mix around I've got at the moment. And then I've also got the mini driver for this year too. I've got a great through that I've never really changed at all. It's been in my bag forever. It's an RBZ stage 2. It's been in and out here and there, but that's been constant. But I changed for, well, I haven't changed. It's just another option. I grabbed the Cobra King Tech mini driver this year because it goes 290.
Do I need to try that thing out today? Yeah, that's good.
So good.
I just, nothing bad saying it's Cobra. It's just never been a brand I really look at.
I would say probably TaylorMade and the.
I didn't like the TaylorMade, and I've cracked two of their faces, and I'm just done with it. I like can't trust it anymore.
Did you like the size at least?
I did like the size.
The only one
that's why I liked it.
Well, that's the only one that compares in size. So I don't like
because the Callaway is too big, and the Titleist is too small.
Titleist is just a big.
Three wood.
Yeah. Callaway is just like another driver. And those two are the only two that actually make sense. I don't like the TaylorMade just because it sits close to my eye. So I would have to get 15 and a half, knock it down. And then it actually did sit okay.
I'm the same way.
But the Cobra, great. You got 33 settings. So you can mess around until you figure out the white run.
I just put it in a
flat setting and it sits perfect. So
really?
Yeah. So I think you're in for a good idea going because I think there's going to be more so than often. You're going to probably play. You got a 7-wood, right?
I've got a utility wood on the way. That's basically a 7-wood.
So I think at Winsong, especially because it does get pretty windy out there, that's a game time decision. You look at the weather and go, oh, that's pretty windy. I'll probably put 4-iron in the 3-iron in the bag today instead of the utility wood or vice versa. Oh, it's dead calm. I can just hit that all day, especially into like 9. You got 230 there. You need that thing to come in down really soft. If you get a 4-iron into there, you've got no chance.
Yeah, you don't. I mean, unless you literally split the gap perfectly on the front left of the green, but like you'd have to be insane to try and do that every time you play out there. And I'm playing, you know, 2-3 times a week out there. So, how different is it? You know, I always find it funny watching throughout the course of the year, especially on tour, how well the guys from overseas play in different like types of conditions and different types of tournaments. Fitzpatrick obviously played really good this last week. He almost won at the Players. For you, like playing and growing up in England, how different of a game is it over there? And then how much does that translate into, you know, playing golf over here? And then also like your fitting style or tendencies? Because I think it is interesting as somebody who, you know, is doing what you're doing, having all the knowledge from like playing a completely, I think it's a completely different style of golf overseas, right? How does that change the way that you look at it or does it not?
It definitely does. I think when I first came over, it was night and day different. I've struggled really badly. The first time I played Winsong, I had no idea what to do.
Yeah.
Because it's just so big. I've never been on a golf course that big in my life. Like, I usually, everything's very tight and tree-lined. Have you played over in the UK?
I've played in Ireland and that's it.
Okay. So but everything Ireland. Is a lot tighter. There's a lot more trees. Like, you know what, the way I used to always play is I'd pick a target, well, I always still do, pick a target in the distance. So there's always some sort of tree there because it's always tight golf courses. And then I get to Windsong, there's nothing to aim at. I didn't know what to do.
Yeah, Ireland was just like Windsong for me. Yeah.
I just start like aiming at like bits of grass on the fairway. I'm like, this is so weird. And also then you could hit a lot, and that's the other thing, you could hit a lot of greens in most American style golf courses, but have 50 feet putts all day. So now my speed putting had to get really good, which, and that's why there's a reason I'm a fitter, and it's definitely because of that. but it's crazy. And I think it does translate into my fitting a lot. I think straight away, I didn't really agree with a lot of fitting philosophies that I was hearing from some other fitters.
Sure.
We're talking about just get that ball really high, come down really soft, and talk about land angle a lot. And I didn't really understand it too much to start with, but the more I kind of kept fitting, I was like, okay, it does make sense because of the style we're playing here. But I always like to ask people the question of what conditions do you play in? Do you play a muni where it's bone dry in the summer? That's a different fitting to you coming in and saying you're playing Windsong Farm, where I guess kind of firm out there, I guess, but you're playing somewhere that's really soft all the time, like maybe an Interlochen, for instance, where greens are relatively pretty soft all the time, and you know it's kind of just target golf.
Yeah,
that's a different fitting to someone who comes in and says I play golf at muni and it's completely baked out. Well, you're going to want something to come that's going to come up way higher, come down way softer. I understand that, but then you might have different scenarios in a driver fitting where it's like, oh, it's bait. Oh, let's find you something that runs.
Yeah.
Because, in reality, it's great on a screen what's happening here, but you take this outside, it might have gone 260, but now you go out to some bait conditions. We get this thing coming in low and running. Oh, that thing's going miles.
I wonder how long it's going to be until, like, TrackMan or whoever comes out where you can find comparable, like, ranges or stuff to your, like, course when you do fittings. That would be really cool.
That would be cool.
I don't know if the juice is worth the squeeze there in terms of like, you know, all the courses, but like, you know, on my GS Pro here, I've got, I mean, Hazeltine's on there, Windsong's on there, bunch of, you know, courses are on there. It'd be interesting, like, if you could like kind of mimic the playing conditions of places and then like, oh yeah, we're going to hit eight irons. We'll go like, you know, we'll go to hole seven or whatever and like, replicate like what the green style is like and fit that way. I wonder how long or how far away we are from that.
I mean, that's taking fitting to one more level, right? I mean,
yeah.
I think there's the only thing that's kind of close right now is probably Ping's Copilot app that they give us out. I mean, you see
I'm familiar with it because I had Marty Jurtsen on, if it wasn't last year, it was the year before, right when they were starting to come out with it.
Yeah.
It was actually hilarious because it wasn't out yet. And when I put that clip up of Marty, people went crazy. They're like, how do I get this? How do we download this? All this stuff. And they're like coming at me like I can help them. I'm like, dude, I'm the one in charge of the Ping Copilot app. Yeah.
Yeah, but they have a cool thing on their gapping in our store where you can change. So go through like a little bit of a questionnaire to start, you can ask what temperature and what altitude you usually play at. You know, it sits at 70 in zero straight away. So if you're, especially our fitters down in Scottsdale, I bet that's really cool to use.
Because
if you're someone who plays at Desert Mountain all the time and you come down to get fit by us and all the numbers are 15 yards shorter, you're going to have a horrid time.
Yeah. I played in Arizona where, you know, I mean, the ball just flies. I feel like a god whenever I play there. And then I went and I played, Torrey Pines for my birthday, obviously sea level, like around the ocean, like ball was going, it felt like nowhere. Yeah. I mean, I was like, this is actually crazy. Like that was the first time I really felt it like in a pretty close stretch of playing golf, right? Like it was like 2 weeks apart.
Yeah.
That's the other thing too, that I don't think pros get enough credit for. I mean, obviously everyone knows how good they are, but just to be able to play in California on certain types of grass and conditions 1 week and then go to Florida and play something completely different the next week and be in it, Arizona right after, like it's crazy how good they are with all the different, especially like chipping around the greens.
Yeah, like huge difference.
Yeah, for like those top 10 guys like Scotty that can just do it good everywhere. Obviously you see some players that struggle in certain conditions and, you know, others thrive in certain types of conditions, but like the Scotties of the world or the Rorys where they're just good everywhere, just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think they, I think it's crazy how, well, they got their caddies and stuff, but their yardage charts are just so detailed. Not just the ones they get every week, but the ones that they have already written up for the next temperature, the next altitude. That makes such a big difference.
Yeah.
I think if you can turn up to your practice round and have half an idea what's going on, well, you can get so much more out of that practice round. I think I went when I was down the US Mid-Am last year, it's down at Troon and Troon North, and I was playing Troon to start with in the practice round, and I had it such a bad practice round. I think I airmailed every single green I looked at.
Who was it, Troon North in Arizona?
Yeah.
Gross.
It was a mixture of Pinnacle.
Do you like that course?
I actually loved it. I say I loved it because I was in the first round. I was like 6 under through 16.
Played good.
I was playing really good. But I was like, so I'm like playing there. Everything went over the long and went long and went long. And I was like, what am I going to do? I don't even know what my yardages are. I was such bad preparation.
Yeah.
And then I went back to one of my old teammates' house at Tonto Verde, and I was sitting there. I was like, all right, what can I do? I was like, oh, I got pink Copilot. So I put the different temperature that was playing at and the altitude, put all of my TrackMan numbers in there because I already have them from just a few days prior.
Yeah.
Put them all in. It pumps out a yardage chart for you. So
that's awesome.
The full gapping. So I literally took
that's
it out
so
the
cool.
next day. I went out to Troon North and I was playing this practice round. And I was like, hitting shots of these numbers. It was perfect. And I was like, I actually spoke to Marty about this and Chris Brody, the guy who does all the, he's the brains behind the whole thing. A few months ago, and I was telling them about this story because I was like, it made
world of difference.
That was a fitting tool, but from a performance point of view, it made a huge difference to me.
Wow, you just gave me such a good idea, and I'll even say it out loud because it'd be kind of hard to. But like, imagine if you could build an app for people, or like, you know, let's say I go to the range at Windsong at the beginning of the year, middle of the year, and I get all of my numbers, and I put in altitude, the spin number, average spin numbers, you know, launch and yardage of every single one of my clubs. And then like you go play somewhere and you put in your location and then it tells you now what your stock yardages are. I mean, that's basically what it does, right?
Yeah, there's a few things similar out there like that right now, but
are there?
Not as good as what Ping are doing. And
yeah,
I think
that's a great, that's a
really cool.
I would love to have that, right? For how much I travel, like I play golf and just be like, all right, here's where I'm playing today. Like, what's my stock pitching wedge, 7 iron, 5 iron?
Yeah. And
you would see it change a couple yards, I'm sure.
I did the same test with the Gopher golf team a few months ago. Justin invited me down for a practice and I pulled this out and I was like, well, let's do this a few times. Let's get you ready for Puerto Rico, wherever you're going next. So we did the stuff that they, for the temperature and the altitude for where they're going, and actually changed the settings on TrackMan to the same altitude and temperature. And to be honest, the yardages weren't really that close to each other.
No, I believe it.
It really wasn't that good comparing it on the TrackMans and stuff. So I was like, well, take these down there, hit them, hit with these gapping yardages for me. Give me some feedback. See which one is actually more accurate. And they said the Ping Copilot gapping tool was way better than
really?
The numbers that they took from TrackMan that week. Hmm. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So there's definitely some. Definitely not. Nothing's perfect, but it was at least 3 or 4 yards difference every time. So.
I've heard a couple of the Ping employees and guys talk about how they are a R&D research and development company before they are like a golf company that. Like they're, you know, obviously they're a golf company, but they say that they put research and development like first, and then they make golf clubs and equipment. I'm wondering, why don't they make a ball? I feel the ball conversation, I think, is going to be more important, especially as they start to get into the rollback. But like you mentioned, Cam Young, he talked about how he switched to the left dash, and all of a sudden, like, his wedge game just went, like, crazy through the roof good.
Oh,
because
left dash prototypes, even lower spinning than the left dash.
It's lower spinning, because he talked about, like, he's like, I put so much spin on it, like, I couldn't take it off of it no matter what I tried to do. Gave me a left dash or whatever he's got.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, he's like, yeah, 121 went 121. Yeah. And it just completely changed my game.
That actually goes back to it's with wedges as well, especially. Any elite wedge player or any elite player in the world, you're going to want to try and launch your wedge at 30 degrees or under. If you're not launching it at 30 degrees or under, you're never going to get that one bounce check.
That yeah, I saw number. Rory say that he tries to launch it, what is it, half the...
It was half of the loft of the club.
Is that what it was? Half
something like that.
Because it wasn't half the yardage. Because from 100, you
like
wouldn't
half
launch
the loft
at 50.
Of the club is with wedges. He's talking.
I think that's what it was. I think you're right. It was half the loft of the club.
But I think I'm missing a piece in there. But around about 30 degrees of launch for any sort of pitch shot, that is the most you do. As soon as you get above 30, that's when you're going to start to get the ones that balloon on you, and you start to lose a lot of control on that golf
ball. That's me. That's what happens to
we
me.
You need to start driving it down.
I'm working on it. Mm-hmm. All right, to wrap up, I always got to ask the fitters and the guys that do this for a living, what's in the bag? And then for you specifically, like you said, you're playing. I want to hear about the amateur stuff you're playing this year. Need to follow along with my boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in the bag, GT4 driver at the moment, Ventus TR Red, which I've played for a little while. I may switch that out coming soon, but might not.
Switch the head or the shaft?
Just head. Maybe I'll do a 3 of some sort. I'm getting there. I'm getting closer.
All right.
Then I got the Cobra King Tech mini driver in the bag,
which maybe I'll get today.
Which is really, really good. Love that thing. RBZ Stage 2 3 wood, the tour head. Love that thing. That thing's never leaving the bag, no matter what. Mizuno 245 3-iron, and a 245 2-iron as well. Some more options.
Yeah, you're top of the bag. I've got
everything.
3-iron, 2-iron, mini driver. The two-iron,
I'd never use it here. If I go back home, it's the only club I use. Really? But here, I won't ever use it. Then 4-iron through pitching wedge. I've been playing the Mizuno 241s for a while, the blades. I'm trialing the Strixon ZXi 7s currently.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
They're so good.
I got 4-iron through 7, and then I got the Z Forge from 8 to pitching wedge. I like a little bit more consistency down the bottom. I historically always played those before I started playing Mizuno a few years ago, before they started supporting me a few years ago. So I'm kind of trialing them because they were really good. And then I'm going to play the T1 Mizuno wedges. But I may...
Mizuno wedges?
But I might be switching to Larry's wedges. Larry might be making me some wedges coming soon. Sick. So we might do something there. And then the putter is actually... Well, this will be a nice little preview. Putter is actually being decided through a social media bracket.
No way.
Yeah, we're doing... Putter madness, not March madness.
I love it.
Putter madness. So we've got 32 putters at the moment, 4 different regions, blade, zero torque, mallets.
Sick.
And wild card region. Which
and you're just going to play whatever comes out of it?
Yeah, whatever comes out of it, I'm going to then actually do a...
So you're either a phenomenal putter or really bad. Which one is it?
Oh, I'm horrendous.
I was going to say, because if you're really good, you can putt with anything. And if you're really bad, you don't care what it is. It's just going to work out.
As long as it works. I think last year, I switched putter every single event I played.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's more than me. I switched like once a month.
Yeah, like I qualified for the US Mid-Am arm locking a zero torque Odyssey thing just because... I was just desperate. So I qualified for that, arm locking it.
That's sick.
I won the qualifier, and then I was like 3 days out from the actual tournament, and I looked at TJ Holfin, one of our fitters at Minneapolis, and I was like, there is no chance that I can putt with this at the mid-am. Like, not doing it. Because every time I had a long putt, it came away from my arm. I just hated it. I couldn't do it. So I went down into the vault in Minneapolis, and I was like, I'm going to go find the cheapest, goodest-looking putter in there, and that's what I'm going to use this week. And I found a Odyssey 330M, which is like a half moon mid mallet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was one of the O-Works, and it was like $60 before a second swing discount. And I was like, I'm playing that this week.
Yeah.
So I took it down there, and I was like I said, I was like 6 under through 16 in the first round, and I was like holding everything. I was like, oh, it's a pretty
good decision. Great. Just got to look at something different.
Yeah, that's a great decision. But yeah, so putter is just up in the air.
Huh. Yeah. I wonder what's going to, I mean, it'll be interesting to see people's vote, right? Because it's going to be way different than, everybody, like, have you tried the spider? Because everybody seems to win with the spider.
Well, I say it's more of a social media vote. It's not really a vote. I'm actually doing, we're doing a head-to-head matchup.
Oh, so you've got 32 putters and whoever wins the tourney. So like if Arizona wins the tourney and Arizona is the TaylorMade spider, that's what you're gaming.
100%.
Sick.
Yeah, well, at least for the first couple of events, and then I'll see if I need to... If I've thrown up on myself, then
Have you tried broom style putting yet?
I tried that. I got really shaky hands. Anyone who knows me, I've got really shaky hands. I don't know why. It just happens.
Yeah.
I tried it, and I think I missed a 1 foot putt the first time.
You're like, yeah, this isn't it.
No chance.
See, I was the opposite. I had never tried it. We were at Sleepy Hollow of all places, and I couldn't putt with it. Just nothing was working. And my buddies, they do the broomstick and they really like it. And they're like, I'm like, all right, let me try it. And I just started hooping everything. I mean, it was, it was crazy. Like,
was it honeymoon period or was it good though?
No, I've still got, I haven't switched from the broom. So nice. I tried, I think when I was in it that day, that was the Jailbird. I went to the TaylorMade one for a while, which I really liked. And I just picked up a lab off the shelf one day because I used to use the Mez 1 Max, mm-hmm. but not in broom. And so I was used to it and I always liked how it rolled. And I just grabbed that and I've been using it ever since. Yeah. Putting great. I don't know what it is. I think it's because I get more over the ball, like it's more upright and I just see the line better.
Yeah. I mean, I see it. I think it's putting's a very feel thing, more athletic. You know, it's like just throwing a ball, just throw it. And it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just kind of
I don't have to think about like my hands and my takeaway. Like it's just very like just be an athlete, see the line and roll on the line. And that seems less thinking for me tends to be better. So,
usually for most people.
Yeah, especially in the game of golf. Yeah. Well, this was awesome, man. Appreciate you coming on. You're out at the Minnetonka location. Absolutely. People can obviously find you there. Harrison Arnold will track in all your amateur events this year. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I'll see you around the shop, and appreciate you coming on the Member Guest Podcast.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Yeah.